The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Over the line, Orr throws it. He's in. A backhander and a save by Tony Esposito.
Stan Mikita was a small guy, very cocky in those days.
A right hand by Magnuson, and he puts that guy down.
Magnuson trying to tear his hair out.
NBC Chicago's James Neveau.
Murphy picked out of mid air to Amani. Set him up, Roenick.
Odyssey Chicago Hockey Insider, Jay Zawoski.
No more! Hawks win again! Chris Chelios in overtime!
Part of Blue Wire Podcast.
Came off the boards, he shoots, he's going! Down to the Thames! A game-winning goal! The Hawks live to fight another day!
Rolling back, Sobola drives, kept it front,
the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Chicago's going to be in last place forever.
Clear to center for Thames, he got a breakaway! Thames to win the game!
To you by Triple Threat Sports, Fry the Coop, and by the Since In-Law Group. Let's drop the puck.
Welcome in, Blackhawks fans. This is the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast post-game show. My name is James Neveau from NBC5, and with me, as always, is Jay Zawoski of Odyssey, of WBBM, of the I'm Fat Podcast. We get to discuss a Blackhawks victory. They won for the first time in the nation's capital since 2006, beating the Washington Capitals in a shootout on Thursday night. Jay, we kind of talked a little bit before the show started, and I think that it's a very good place to start our conversation now that the mics are hot and the tape's rolling. This was a really interesting, entertaining, and well-played hockey game, I thought, by both teams.
Yeah, that's the place to start, because there is a lot of other sort of periphery stuff we're going to talk about in the game itself. But overall, to take a win on the road, shootout or not, against a team that was engaged and interested and wanting to be there and playing hard, that's impressive. And now we've seen a stretch of games from the Hawks in a row, wins and losses, in which they've been arguably as good as or better than their opponents, but we're going to get into all of it real quick. Make sure you're following us on our social media accounts, Madhouse Pod on Twitter, Madhouse _ Pod on Instagram, Madhouse Hockey Pod on Facebook. We've got our T Public Shop. Check that out. Link in bio everywhere. And I think that's really all we need to mention here. So Hawks win 4-3 in the shootout. Patrick Kane is the only one to score. Two Capitals hit the post, and it was like, I think, six for the game in this one.
I lost count, yeah.
Yeah, I think Pat Foley said six. I want to get into that a little bit, too, because I think a lot of that, not all of it, but a lot of it has to do with Marc-Andre Fleury's positioning, right? Like, there's just nowhere else to shoot the puck, and you got to aim wide, and you miss, you know. So he gets a little bit of credit for some of those. Not all six, though.
No.
Not going to go that far.
No, he owes those posts a nice steak dinner. I know he's got a habit of thanking the posts and gently caressing them, but I think they earned themselves a meal tonight.
Yeah, at least. I think second base, at least, for the goalpost. What, Mark, why are you humping? I owe it to the goalpost. I'm sorry. I have to hump it. All right, where should we start?
This thing took a weird turn.
It sure did. It usually does. So where do we want to start on this one? I think just in general, a solid defensive performance against a good team, especially
with only five defensemen, for the record.
Exactly. Connor Murphy goes down in the first period, does not return, looks very woozy after taking a big and clean hit from Alex Ovechkin. And if you missed the hit, Ovechkin, after the play and after Murphy was up, sort of came up and, I don't know if he apologized, but sort of patted him on the back, letting him know he wasn't trying to hurt him there. And it was just a clean hit. Ovechkin's a huge dude who can hit like a champ, and Connor Murphy got the bad end of that hit. So, yeah, the Hawks with five defensemen for the bulk of the game, and they really sort of stepped up. The one area of concern I had, and I think it's understandable, you know, when you see a guy in your team like Murphy, a leader, go down, get injured, that was probably the worst stretch of the game for the Hawks, was the minutes immediately following that hit. Mm-hmm. They really had a dip, and if you look at kind of the game flow on Natural Stat Trick, you'll see in the first period a giant dip in favor of the Capitals. That's when that happened. Then the Hawks take the lead at the end of the first period, and they things got better. You know, like then it started ramping up in favor of the Hawks, but they really fell behind in terms of generating play, momentum, all those sort of things after Murphy went down, which again, kind of understandable when you see a guy that important to your team looking that bad of shape.
Yeah. I mean, that is a leader on the team. He wears an A for a reason. The team really looks highly upon him and looks to him for leadership and just a very key member of a defense that you and I have both shouted out on multiple occasions recently. They've been playing a lot better lately, and Murphy's been a big part of the reason why. And in the short term, losing him for the game and kind of having that lull when he left the ice was very noticeable. But if he's not going to be able to play in some of these games coming up, the Blackhawks are going to have some pretty serious issues, because I think that his impact on the game cannot be understated. I think that the Blackhawks have been playing some really sound defense recently. They've been doing a lot of things better on that end of the ice, and losing him is going to kind of shuffle up the defensive pairings a little bit. It's going to force the Blackhawks to probably have some matchups that they're not going to be overly confident in, especially playing these games on the road. And it just is kind of a cascading effect. And I think that the instance tonight where they kind of struggled when he left the ice, I get the sense that we're probably going to see a little bit more of that and a little bit more kind of jumbling up, I would think, of the pairings on the part of Derek King. He's going to have to kind of pick his way through, and hopefully Murphy won't be out for long, but it's really hard to imagine that this is just going to be kind of a day-to-day type thing. It feels like this, not to speculate too much, but I wasn't overly confident watching him leave the ice tonight.
No, very wobbly, very woozy. Obviously, as we always do, we're keeping our eye on Twitter for any sort of post-game comments. And if we get him, we'll, of course, pass them on before we wrap things up. It's a big loss. And if there's good news for the Hawks, it looks like Riley Stillman is very close to returning. We'll probably be ready to go in the next game. But as we look through the minutes here for the defenseman, Connor Murphy had 11 shifts, 8:09. Again, like I said, left the game in the first period. Seth Jones, 29:37. Jake McCabe, 27:39. Yeah, 27:39. Just scrolling down here. Sorry, Kalnick 15:42, Gustafson 22:07, Caleb Jones 18:05. So you saw a lot of these guys who aren't used to playing minutes this big pick up the slack and play really well. And Seth Jones, by the way, a goal, an assist, 3 shots on goal, 5 more shot attempts, 3 hits, and 6 blocked shots. Not to mention,
that sounds like a good game.
Yeah, not to mention the late game tying goal. Yes, I know he had a 2-on-1 in overtime where he shot it wide, but he was going for the far post and just missed. Seth Jones was a man possessed in this game. A couple times won puck battles against Alexander Ovechkin, which not a lot of people do, for the record. It's not something that happens very often. He's had his ups and he's had his downs this season, but the ups are way more often than the downs, and this was one of his best games of the season, I thought.
Yeah, and I think that some people may look at some of the possession metrics and may think to themselves that he didn't have an overly great night, considering that he ended up being a 40% on the old Corsi chart, but there are several things to keep in mind. One, he was getting, honestly, some really tough defensive assignments tonight. I felt like the Capitals kind of went at him a little bit, and I think that playing almost 30 minutes in the game, you're inevitably going to be tasked with stopping Alex Ovechkin and his band of henchmen. And I thought that he largely acquitted himself well tonight on that front, and I just, again, have to say how awesome it is to have a blue liner like Seth Jones who can create so many plays on the offensive side of things. And I thought that he had a really great night on both ends of the ice. I love the way he's been moving with the puck. When we watched him play against St. Louis, it's always great to watch him kind of eyeball the way that the play is going to develop and then move quickly to kind of take advantage of any openings. And he continued to do that tonight, I thought. And it was a really well-played game at both ends of the ice by Seth Jones, especially only having five defensemen. It would have been really easy for him to kind of get gassed a little bit and maybe have some plays that he took off on the offensive end. But I didn't see any of that from him tonight. And I thought he was hugely effective throughout the game. The goal that he scored to tie the game was awesome. Beauty. It was so good. Like, such a good, hard shot for a defenseman of all people. I was just extremely impressed with the way that he played on both ends of the ice tonight and have been for a little while now, I think. It's been a while since he's really had kind of a rough game. I really have been liking his play.
Yeah, when you're on the ice for half the game, and that's basically what Seth Jones did. He played basically half the game today. And you're on a team that is not a cup contender. You're when the metrics, at the end of the night, your metrics are going to be low. Right? Because just in general, you're a team that's not going to win a possession battle and you're playing half the game. So sometimes those numbers can lie a little bit. By the way, assisting on that goal by Seth Jones was Josiah Slavin playing in his first game in the NHL, picking up an assist. And I, you know, 10:40 of ice time for Slavin. I kind of liked his game. He looks like he belongs. You know, we talk about this a lot. Like, kind of, you watch guys play and you say, what does this guy provide? Like, what do the Hawks see in this guy that made them call him up? Because over the last few days, you and I have been speculating, like, okay, if it's not Nylander and it's not Reichel, who's currently injured, who is the next call-up for the Hawks? And Slavin is the guy, comes in, plays well, plays on the penalty kill in the first period, and I think he acquitted himself really well. I like his game a lot. I don't think he's going to be, you know, everyone wants to be the next Brandon Hagel now, right? Like, oh, a bottom six guy who surprised people. I don't know if that's realistic.
The
but
fourth line farm.
Give me Josiah Slavin over, I'll take him over Hardman at this point. I'll take him over Reese Johnson at this point. I mean, look, it's one game, so I don't want to make too many grand proclamations. But from what I saw of him in this game, he looks like he belongs and he looks like a player.
I think that you mentioned that you wouldn't mind him playing over Mike Hardman. I would counter that just a little bit by saying that I really liked what I saw from him when he was out on the ice with Hardman and with Ryan Carpenter. I thought that that line had some really good chemistry during the game. They had really good possession numbers according to Natural Stat Trick. By all rights, I think could have easily had a goal or two in this game, just some of the chances that they were generating. And I thought that Slavin played really good on both ends of the ice. I think that he absolutely has earned another shot in the lineup on Saturday. And frankly, I think that he would be perfectly suited to playing that wing again with Carpenter and Hardman. I think that that was a really interesting combination put together by Derek King. It's one that I think could potentially have some success. There's not a ton of offensive upside on that line, but they still created some chances when they got opportunities tonight. And I think that if they can continue to do that, that's a really good solid line to have at the bottom of the lineup that'll kind of allow you to mix and match a little bit on the top three lines. I think that's something that Derek King is probably going to continue to do, just a little bit of tinkering here and there. But if you have that one solid line at the bottom that you can trust to play in either an offensive or a defensive situation, I think you kind of ride it. And I think that's something the Blackhawks are definitely going to be able to do here in the short term.
Yeah, and I think this is the lineup I'm riding too. This is what I'm going with. And, you know, Dylan Strome returns to the lineup, wasn't overly impressive, had a really nice play that we'll get to in a little bit here, is because there's a big part of this game I want to talk about. But Slavin, Hardman, Carpenter, 1, 2, and 3 on the team in possession today. That line played really, really well. And for me, this is what I'm sticking with. This, to me, feels like the best lineup. Now, with Murphy out, hopefully Stillman's ready to go. I don't know. It looks like Eric Gustafson is just part of the plans here. He's not going to, you know, it doesn't look like he's going to sit out. And again, he hasn't been horrible. He just hasn't provided the offense we all thought he was going to. But
Scott Powers had an interesting piece about what he's been contributing and kind of acknowledged that he hasn't exactly been the player that the Blackhawks kind of advertised him as being, but made a fairly compelling case that he's been one of their top six defensemen lately and kind of deserves to continue to get some ice time. So kudos to Scott for kind of digging in on that a little bit. It definitely kind of made me think about things more.
Yeah, and I think that he's been better defensively than we expected. So, you know, you sacrifice some of the offense for some defense, fine. I'll take that, especially on this team that needs all the help it can get. defensively. The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Fry the Coop and frythecoop.com. Go get some of the best damn hot chicken you'll ever have in your life. Oaklawn, Elmhurst, Westtown, Prospect Heights, and Tinley Park. The tenders, the donut chicken sandwich, the Nashville hot chicken sandwich, the craft beers, everything there is fantastic. Go try Fry the Coop, frythecoop.com. All right, I didn't want to start here, and I have to get to it. And I'm fearful of this becoming a show where every day we dissect Kirby Doc's play with a microscope, right? Like we're just nitpicking at everything he does. But this game in particular really kind of frustrated me, because as we've been saying in our continued discussion about his lack of production, we've said, look, everything else is there aside from faceoffs, right? Like good with the puck, strong on the puck, willing to go in front, good passer, making things happen. You know what I mean? Like you see the skill. This to me was one of the most frustrating nights I've seen from Kirby Doc. And it started when Dylan Strome worked his ass off, fought out in front of the net, gave the puck to Kirby Doc in front of the net all alone. And Doc passes it back to Strome, who's got two Washington Capitals draped all over him. No shot on goal is recorded. And then they see the replay of that play. And Doc had all day to settle the puck down, take the shot he wanted to. I think a major part of this is confidence, but someone's got to get the message to him. Kirby, we want you to start thinking shoot first. Shoot, shoot, shoot. Get it into your head to shoot the puck. Because, look, we've said time and time again that if Kirby Doc is not really, really good, then the next generation of Hawks is not going to win much. Like,
yeah,
the number three overall pick becoming a star player is almost essential to this team's next phase. And if he's just a guy, or if he's the next Dylan Strome, you know, number three overall pick to become a guy who's in and out of the lineup and inconsistent, the window for the Hawks to win again is not going to be open for a long, long time. So
apparently the Blackhawks shouldn't be allowed to pick third in the draft.
Well, it worked out with Taves, right?
Well, didn't with Cam Barker.
That's true. Hey, you won a cup. Come on.
That's true. He did. You got me there.
And then, so fine. Confidence. Shoot the puck. We've been through this with Kirby Doc before. If you've got the game on DVR, go back and watch Kirby Doc in overtime. Ugh. He was, and I hate saying this because I feel like it's unfair, but he, to me, looked incredibly uninterested in defending or competing. He was outworked on the boards by Kuznetsov. There was another play later where Kuznetsov went around him again. And you saw him with one hand on the stick as always, blade in the air, right? Yep. And him just sort of turning around, like half-heartedly chasing guys who are busting in on Marc-Andre Fleury for a scoring chance. And 3-on-3, you've got to be engaged. You've got to be engaged all the time. But I don't know if something is starting to get to him, if he's starting to really feel the pressure of his scoring slump. I don't know, man. I don't know what the answer is, but maybe it's time for him to make his Rockford debut. I know that sounds hot takey, but how do you get him back on track? How do you get him feeling confident again? Maybe you need him to go down there and clown some people for a week and skate circles around some people for a week and remind himself, oh, yeah, I'm Kirby Doc. I was a number three overall pick. I'm a hell of a hockey player when I believe in myself. Because when I'm seeing like body language, which is always hard to read, I'm getting really bad body language vibes from Doc. And now we've already seen the reflection in the play, but now we're seeing the body language too. I don't know, man. Maybe it's a little bit harsh, and I don't know if I want to go there like hard just yet that he needs to be sent down. But instead of a punishment, it could be something of a reset for him. Mm-hmm. Remember, the guy has never played a game in Rockford, ever. Maybe he needs 2-3 games to just go get it back, feel better about himself, and then come back, you know, guns blazing. I don't know. I just don't know how they're going to get him out of this.
I think the time to do that would have been kind of this stretch that started on Sunday when they lost to the Sharks. I feel like if you were going to kind of have Doc reset, would have been like kind of a stretch where you're playing a couple of road games, but you only have 3 games in the span of a week, kind of give the Blackhawks a little bit of a chance to, you know, have some flexibility in the lineup because you're not playing as much. This stretch they have coming up in the next 2 weeks, starting Saturday, they play 9 games.
Yeah.
I don't get the sense that they're going to be able to have this be the Kirby Doc lesson tour just because of the fact that they're going to have so many games bunched up into such a short amount of time. So I think that your idea there is not one that you can kind of dismiss out of hand. I know it sounds like you mentioned kind of sounds like a almost a hot takey thing.
Yeah,
but
and I just let me be clear real quick. I'm not saying like Kirby, you suck, go to Rockford. I'm just trying to think of a way the Hawks can get his game back. And I
scratch.
But that feel I suppose that's an easier way to do it. But if confidence is the issue, how does he get it back? Anyway, I derailed your point. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, what I was going to say is that if you're talking about confidence being an issue with him, what else could they possibly do at the NHL level? They've had him playing with Alex DeBrincat and Patrick Kane, and if that doesn't get a guy going offensively, what the hell is going to?
Right.
I mean, he didn't play the entire game with them tonight. He only played, I think it was a couple of minutes with those two, and then primarily played with DeBrincat and Strom during the game. But I'm noticing the same things you are. I have pointed out on numerous occasions when he's in front of the net, when you're standing there, that's great. Screen the goaltender. He has his stick up around his waist all the time. He never has his stick on the ice. It is such a weird quirk, and you're not going to score any goals when you have your stick up there. You're not going to deflect any pucks there. You're not going to fluke into a goal most of the time when you have your stick like that.
You know, if a knuckleball's coming at you, then you move the puck from the ice to the air, not vice versa. Yeah,
it's just so bizarre watching him skate around with his stick not on the ice, and he does that occasionally on defense too, and it drives me absolutely nuts, and I'm not sure why. Is he afraid of like committing stick penalties? I have no idea what's kind of going through his head when he's doing some of that stuff, but you notice him losing puck battles. You notice him in the corners, the puck always kind of squirts out instead of him coming away with it. He's not skating with a ton of confidence right now either, and that's always something that's really hard to kind of read.
Right.
But on a breakout, you can always tell he's thinking so hard. He's gripping the stick so tight. There's a lot going on in his head right now, and I'm not sure what exactly is going to be the kind of the key to unlock that save. But right now, he's quickly trending in a direction I don't like, because you're looking at some of the other rookies and young guys who got drafted in that 2019 draft, and you just are watching Doc arguably regress. I don't even think he's just kind of treading water. I think he might actually be actively regressing. And you look at kind of the rise of some of those other guys, like your Zegras's and all those guys, it's really coming down to the point where you're kind of wondering if the Blackhawks are going to have to cope with the fact that they maybe missed on this pick. And I hate saying that, because this is going to be his first 82 game season with the Blackhawks, but man, is he not inspiring any confidence right now at all.
You mentioned the 2019 draft, so let's actually take a look at that. Okay. Number one, Jack Hughes. Number two, Kaapo Kakko. Number three, Kirby Doc. Jack Hughes has played 120 NHL games. He has 55 points, 20 goals, and 35 assists. Mm-hmm. Kaapo Kakko has played 131 games. He's got 22 goals, 26 assists for 48 points. Kirby Doc has played 103 games. So the least of those three, he's got 13 goals, 28 assists for 41 points. So when you look at the points per game, if I do the math here real quick, I think Doc would actually be ahead of those guys in terms of points per game. Let me just do it real quick. Do, do, do. Jeopardy music, right? 41 divided by 103. Play along at home if you'd like. That's 0.398 points per game. Okay, now we'll do Kakko. 48 divided by 131 is 366. So Doc's got a lead on him. And then we've got Hughes, 55 divided by 120. 458. Yeah, so Hughes has the lead in terms of points per game. But remember, Jack Hughes was undoubtedly, you know, there was the hashtag lose for Hughes. He was a huge pick, a no doubt number one overall pick. So Doc is in the conversation with those guys. It just feels like, and maybe it's because we watch him every day, maybe it's because it's been so long since he's scored. And like you said, recently, the arrow is very clearly pointing down on him. And yeah, it's not to me, and again, how many times have we said, it's, people are probably completing my sentence right now, development is not linear. Right. But right now it's linear pointed down.
And that, I'm not, that to me I'm not enough of a knucklehead to say that, like, Moritz Seider from the Red Wings, there's nobody who thought he was going to be pick six. He was kind of far down the board when the Red Wings picked him, right? Like, I'm not going to sit here and try to make an argument that a guy like him or Cole Caulfield or, you know, any of those guys who've kind of had some, like, flashy impacts at whatever level they're playing at right now, I'm not going to say that that clearly means that they're better than Doc or that they clearly were the guy on draft night.
Well, remember, but all these guys have played in the, they've played in the AHL. Caulfield was just sent down like last week or 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And had to get a bit of a breather and come back up. So it's not unheard of. Again, like Bowen Byram, who was taking a pick after Doc, did not play until this season. Right. Other teams are bringing their guys along in a kind of a more natural way. And this is one of the knocks that was on Stan Bowman, is that he was so quick to get his prospects in. And it seemed almost like it was their job to lose instead of win. And if they didn't do anything to prove they absolutely don't belong, they were going to make the team. Whereas most other teams and most other GMs, and hopefully Kyle Davidson is this way, look at it and say, okay, you're probably not going to make the team. Now, if you look like Connor McDavid for the entire preseason and training camp, then we'll reconsider. But unless right. you look that great, you're going to start your career properly in the minor leagues. And I think now that Bowman's out, we might see a little more of a deliberate approach with prospect development. And look no further than Lucas Reichel. I wonder if Stan Bowman was a GM, if Reichel would be in Chicago by now. I would bet dollars to donuts he would be.
Well, yeah, I think that donuts. That's a pretty fair question to ask. And I think another question to ask is, would Jeremy Colliton still be the head coach?
Oh, I don't. It depends. Like, did it if it kept going the way it was going? Remember Emily Kaplan when she first reported that his job was not in danger? Remember all those months ago. And then like, well, now if it's 20 games and they still suck, then we're talking. So maybe we finally would have gotten to that point because the Hawks just played game 22 tonight. So if the season had looked like it was looking, I think, yes, even Bowman would have said, okay, let's put this guy out of his misery. Because at some point, you can't just look at your team in the eyes and say, nope, this is the guy.
Yep.
This is the guy.
So, I will also point out that I think part of the conversation about the 2019 draft is probably being colored a little bit by the fact that Jack Hughes just signed an $8 million a year extension.
Yeah.
And the idea of Kirby Dach signing an extension anywhere close to that is laughable right now.
Yeah. All right, before we move on from this game and get to some of the news and notes of the day, there was one more subtle move that Derek King did that I really liked. Late in the first, Hawks have maybe there's like, let's see, I want to say like 2 minutes left or so. He puts Kane out there with DeBrincat and Doc at the end of the period, just because he's like, I got one more offensive shift here. Let's maximize it. Let's make something happen. And remember, the Hawks had really been getting taken to the woodshed possession wise from the moment the Murphy hit happened to the end of the second period until, with a minute left exactly in the period, DeBrincat scores, assisted from Kane. And then the game, again, watch that game flow on Natural Stat Trick. It goes, as soon as the Hawks score, the arrow points up for them again. That changed the entire game. So a little bit of a heady move by Derek King to tap Patrick Kane and say, go take an extra shift right now, and let's try to score here at the end of the period. And it worked. So I want to give him a little bit of kudos. And as far as that goes, I think that was a pretty solid coaching decision by Derek King.
He's hitting some good buttons. I feel like he's probably not directly responsible necessarily for the record that they've put up that since he's taken charge. But I do think that the players are responding to kind of his expertise, to his honesty, to his presence. I do think that there is something to be said about that. He definitely has kind of changed the tenor of the conversation around the guys in the locker room and on the ice. I know there was a lot of other off-ice stuff that was happening right around that same time that kind of got tangled into that. But if we're looking strictly from a locker room and an on-ice perspective, I feel like he's been a very calming influence, and it's something that we were told when he became the interim head coach that that was going to be something he was going to kind of bring to the table, his honesty and his kind of straightforwardness. And I do think that the players have really responded well to that. And I think that moments like that that you mentioned in the game with him putting Kane out, I think just kind of underscores the fact that he is kind of a really savvy guy and kind of gets the idea of doing things to kind of spark the team that aren't just, you know, bag skating them or whatever. Like, it seems like he's really kind of got a good touch in game for making those types of adjustments. And I do think that that was a good example of him kind of doing something like that to kind of light a little bit of a fire under the team and to kind of turn the momentum around in the game a little bit.
I just like his demeanor overall. He kind of has a calming presence. And I think, like, there's something to be said for just being a normal dude. And yeah. I think Derek King is very much just a normal dude. And I think that's what a lot of us liked about Matt Nagy early on before, like, coaching the Bears drove him clinically insane. It's just, you know, he, like, seemed like a guy you could just hang out with and have a conversation with, and then something changed in him. But I don't know. I like that. And I think it's just such a different approach where Derek King said, all right, I'm not going to come in here and reinvent the wheel. Give me some time to look it over, see what I think. I'm going to trust my assistants. He kind of gave the reins of practice over to Mark Crawford, who, you know, with Colin was just like, okay. Okay, buddy, whatever you think, man. The team looks, it's a different team. They're playing better than I thought they would be able to after seeing the beginning of this year, especially considering the fact that they've turned it around. Remember, the last two games they allowed against St. Louis and San Jose, only 3 shots on goal in the third period. Today they allowed 7, which is still not a huge number. So right. Defensively, they're tightening things up. Now the offense needs to catch up, and, you know, we'll see what happens. It just seems like the waters have calmed a little bit. You just don't see the chaos that we were seeing earlier in the season. Even when the Hawks are kind of, you know, getting the game taken to them a little bit by superior opponents, it still looks normal. Does that make sense? Like, it doesn't look like, what am I watching here? It looks like normal yeah. hockey, even when they're not doing well. And I think there's something to be said for normalcy. And I think Derek King has a lot to do with that whole thing. All right, going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, a couple news and notes. A Blackhawk was traded today. Didn't know if you caught that news. A couple other Hawks in the trade rumors as well, and a couple other things to get to before we wrap it up here on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Welcome back into this post-game edition of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. We've been talking pretty extensively about the Blackhawks shootout victory over the Washington Capitals this evening. Now we must turn our attention to other matters in Blackhawks land, and we will start with a trade! A trade that happened! The Blackhawks made a move, sending Malcolm Subban to the Buffalo Sabres for future considerations. Not past considerations, not present, future.
I like those. Those are the best kind, the future considerations.
They are ideal, yes.
You knew something was going to have to give with the goalie situation. I like Malcolm Subban. It seems like a really great dude. Hopefully he gets to go play a little bit in Buffalo. And it just kind of shows you, like, Delia, Subban, sort of interchangeable. Neither of them has a ton of value in the league. And I think we knew that they probably weren't going to finish this season with both of them in the organization. So Colin Delia gets to be the main man in Rockford, and Malcolm Subban gets a fresh start in Buffalo. So, hey, good luck. Who knows what the future considerations will be, but Malcolm Subban no longer a Hawk. Also, Frank Saravelli, one of the hockey insiders, he just changed affiliation. So let me make sure I give him the right credit here.
For the record, they should have traded for Henry Yokoharu, my friend.
Maybe that's a future consideration, my friend.
That would be a future consideration. You want to get real technical.
Frank Saravelli, now with the Daily Faceoff, he had his list of 15 names in play ahead of the trade deadline. Dylan Strome on the list, not a surprise. We knew that the Hawks are trying to move him. They might have to eat some salary to do so, but the fact remains he is on a trade block. But the name that surprised me, Henrik Borgstrom. And before we get into it, I know that Kyle Davidson does not have the tie to Henrik Borgstrom like Stan Bowman did, where he traded Carlson and Walmart to Florida to get Stillman and Borgstrom and Connolly back. But I think trading Borgstrom now is a really bad idea. Like, I don't know if his value will ever be lower. I would want to see him play. He's got this year and next at $1 million. Then he's a restricted free agent with arbitration rights. Why not at least play out this year with him and see what you've gotten him? He's 24 years old. He has shown some signs of being capable and competent. I would give him a year before I trade him. And if they decide this summer, like, okay, you know, maybe this is a guy we don't need, trade him. He's got a year left and he's restricted. I just think trading Borgstrom now would be a mistake. Whatever they're going to get back for him, to me, is less valuable than the value of getting a look at him for a season.
Should I advocate for the devil or should I agree with you?
I wanted you to say what you think.
Well, what I think is that I'm normally kind of a guy who would say to be patient with somebody who was in all likelihood the centerpiece of a trade. But at the same time, I grow concerned that if they hold on to him and he continues to struggle, that would potentially drive his value down. So I would be curious to know whether the Blackhawks could still maybe potentially sell a little bit higher than maybe we would think after kind of the way he has started, maybe take advantage of some idea that he could still get into some untapped reserves of excellence or something like that. That would be probably the only scenario I could see a logical argument to potentially trade him. Now, of course, if teams are going to kind of try to put you over a barrel and try to give you a really bad offer for him, then no, of course not. I think you hold on to him. But if you're looking at a guy who you could maybe get a team to kind of buy into the hype on a little bit, since he hasn't had that much experience just yet to kind of tamp that down, maybe he's a dude you can do that with.
If you're getting, I'll say this, if you get more than a third round pick for him, I would say do it. But for, if we're talking late round pick or another futures thing, nah, there's no point. Like,
I'd rather go with what I have than, you know, take another lottery ticket and push the payoff down the line. I think it'd be smarter to hold on to him in that scenario.
Yeah, I'm not giving up on him. It's been 13 games. He's only got 2 points, but like we mentioned in the last podcast, there's been a definite jump in his play over the last little bit. This game, not as noticeable. He was a minus one, 2 shots on goal, 1 more shot attempt in 15:49, 2 for 13 at the faceoff dot on a night where the Hawks actually didn't do terrible at the faceoff dot.
Yeah.
Kara 57%. Strome 57%, Taves 72%. He won 13 of 18. And guess what, James?
Guess what?
Kirby Doc, 56%.
You are darn right, man.
That is a huge day. That is a huge, huge day for Kirby Doc. He gets an air.
I saw that. I was like, no way.
He gets an air horn. Way to go, Kirby.
Man, we don't bust that out often. I think that we were critical of his game enough tonight that I think he deserved that.
Yeah, we got to give him a credit. All right, so last thing, and maybe I save the juiciest nugget for last. So today on Twitter, Mando Martinez writes at me, and he says, on the Dropping the Gloves podcast with John Scott today, he mentioned that Dylan Strome has the skills to be a top player in the league, but feels his issue is his work ethic. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and if you've heard any indication of a work ethic issue. I had not heard that until today. Nah. I texted one of my closest sources, one of my best sources, and said, hey, does this jive to you? The response, yes, he's lazy. I mean, that is about as... this has been a source for a long time. One of the ones who's given me some of my biggest scoops, and... usually I have to kind of decode things or a little bit more cryptic. Nope, not with this one. Yes, he's lazy. So work ethic does appear to be an issue for Dylan Strome, which could explain why Jeremy Collin didn't seem to love him. And then Derek King came in and was like, fresh start for Dylan Strome. And then two or three games in, he's like, I think Dylan Strome's going to sit for Reese Johnson. What do you think about that? So that could be, I would imagine that's a huge part of what is influencing how things are going for Dylan Strome this season. So who knows? Maybe he's just worn out, which, you know, these guys are human and they've been through a lot. And if you've heard some of the things he's said this year, he's been like, yeah, you know, I go home to my dog and that makes me happy. My dog and my family. Just kind of talking like a guy who's kind of mentally beat a little bit. And when you feel like you are deep down in the doghouse, sometimes it's hard to find the, what would you say? Like find the motivation to work your way out of it. And that sucks. And it's probably going to cost him his time in Chicago and, you know, probably cost him some money down the road. But Dylan Strome seems like a good dude. I hope he figures it out. But yeah, a little bit of a nugget from one of my best sources that work ethic is indeed, or at least has indeed been an issue for Dylan Strome lately. So something to keep an eye on as the trade deadline approaches and as the season goes on. So anyway, yeah. Good win for the Hawks tonight, man. 4-3 win in Washington in the shootout. Like James said earlier, a bunch of games coming up here soon. So you know there's going to be a bunch of podcasts coming up here soon. So make sure you're subscribed. Leave those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts for us and send us those screenshots December 2nd today. So this weekend, I'm going to go through last month's 5-star reviews and choose two or three people to win Madhouse Podcast prize packs. So if you want one, send those 5-star Apple Podcast reviews. They are like gold for podcasters. And email them to madhousepod@gmail.com. For my partner, James Naveau, I'm Jay Zawoski. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast was brought to you by Fry the Coop, Triple Threat Sports, and by the Since In-Law Group.